You're listening to Triple Radio on the Fat Gatsby Network.
I am recording. We have begun a podcast. A podcast has begun. A podcast has entered the chat. A new podcast is born.
Once more, a new podcast is born, a beautiful baby podcast. That
you can think of a podcast being born as like the start of any given series of pod, you know, like...
Mm-hmm. Like it's a lot podcast, of potential podcast energy.
I prefer to think of every episode as a birth and then a death at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when does a podcast really begin? You know, let's get into that in the political sphere.
I think we should start to legislate this.
Yeah. Yeah,
personally, because
probably should,
because actually. I really just want to hurt the people that I don't like or disagree and that I disagree with.
Yeah, it's not about what I believe, it's what they believe.
Yeah, if I can just punish people for being wrong in my eyes, mm-hmm. then that will make me happy.
Yeah.
This is about nothing in particular.
It's what we're here for. It's what we live for here at Triple Radio, punishing those with whom we disagree. I'm Dave. That's Tim. That's Weiss. Ah, Tim, I stole it from you. I jumped
you
up.
You did. You. Yeah, I was I waiting for you to stop talking so I could do it.
The other
day at a like work function, this big committee meeting they do like once a year, every year, mm-hmm. I introduced myself by saying, "This is Tim Ekibus," like I'm on a podcast. And I didn't think about it until later. And I'm like, that was weird.
Wow.
It's a weird thing to do.
So content brained.
Yeah. Sup, yeah. Fam. This is.
So I think I might just start doing it all the time now. Just,
yeah.
Just sure. Whatever. Yep. I already don't belong in those rooms, but I'm there sometimes.
I heard someone making fun of people using the phrase chat to address a group of people.
This is already outdated.
I know it is. I just, you know what? I don't have enough non-gendered ways to address groups of people. Like, I feel like I'm way overusing y'all lately.
Honestly, I mean, clearly I know where I am, but it is a perfect catch-all. Like, it is the one word
it
that
is,
I
right?
steal. It works.
Yeah, yeah. It works. I need more. I need a little more variety in my vocabulary. So,
yeah.
But also doesn't feel right to say in person. You know,
yeah,
it feels right to say ironically in a lot of ways.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose.
So I'm fucked either way, I guess. I just don't know what to do. Hey, yeah, guys. How you doing?
Keep saying, y'all, I'm tired.
Oh.
Yeah. I woke up in Michigan today.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Where in and who are you? Do I know them?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I was north of Detroit, probably like 30, 40 minutes north of Detroit.
Gotcha.
For the wedding of a girl that I met in Overwatch like 8 years ago.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, weird confluence of things. Cause I actually saw it was my Facebook friendiversary with her today.
Oh.
It was like Overwatch came out, 10 years ago last week. So Overwatch came out 10 years ago last week. That game is now retro.
Yep.
By
at least Jeremy Pair standards.
By Jeremy Pair
standards.
Yeah,
but by someone's standards of sorry. Nope. I just realized I had a speaking of Overwatch, I had like that one of those chats still open. It was gonna ding. Anyway, so yeah, 10 years last week, Overwatch came out, and I met. Yeah, this was just a random person that my group of fools met one night playing Overwatch and grouped up with, and then just started dragging her to other games and playing D&D with. And one thing led to another. And yeah, I met her in person when I was in Detroit last year.
That was going to be my next question is, had you ever actually met her in person?
Yes, I had met her in person before. I had not met in person was one of the other dudes there. He was the only other one in the chat who I had never met in person.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so it was this confluence of like, okay, yeah, 10 years since I started playing Overwatch with this guy, I met him in person. at the wedding of a girl that we met while playing Overwatch together.
And were you all seated at the same table at the reception? Like, was this the Overwatch table?
Oh, there, most of the rest of the group didn't make it, unfortunately, for various reasons. Because we're mostly adults with children. One guy is like a pilot and he had to fly horses to Belgium. And that's a true statement.
Not an excuse.
Not an excuse. He was going to try and make it, but he was, I hate to say stuck in Belgium because it's like, oh, no.
Poor guy.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're in Belgium. So it was just a few of us that made it. But, you know, this is actually one of those things where it was easy for me because it's just right across Canada.
Yep.
Nice, easy drive across Canada.
Hmm.
But I'm still tired because we were out late.
We
shut the place down and then got back, then got up and then got breakfast. And then I left.
So you got back today?
I did get back. I left yesterday morning and I got back today.
So, yep, so you're tired. Yeah.
Yes. I am in short tired. It was just because, my hotel bed was also trying to throw me on the floor. I thought in the middle of the night when I woke up on the very edge of the mattress that I had simply kind of shifted over there naturally. But in the morning when I did some analysis and testing, it was like, oh, wait, no, this side of the bed, like there is something wrong with the box spring that is folding it down and the other side is very firm.
Oh,
so because I just kind of like, you know, because I sleep on that side of our bed here at home and I just kind of naturally, you know, like this, usually my wife's over there, so I'm going to be on this side a little bit more. I was kind of, I think, actually just being herded off the mattress by the mattress itself.
Which, driver's side or passenger side?
I am a passenger side. Okay.
Passenger.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm driver's side over here. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for asking, by the way. Thanks for reciprocating the question. Driver's side for me.
You could have just said that. You could have just been forthcoming.
I could have, but you know, I just I wanted to be. It's nice. It's nice to be asked sometimes.
Yeah. I didn't want to know. Questions. Well, it's good that we can fit in bed together.
Yeah, I know. We'd be highly compatible bedmates.
Yeah,
it's a very passenger question.
So passenger.
Very passenger.
You did not ask. Michigan,
it was
get
cool.
your
it was
shit
great.
Together, RE Hotels.
It was awesome. Just that one, really. I mean, also, they didn't clean out the fridge. There was like a half bottle of Pinot Grigio in there and some leftover pizza. And the iron, probably just the people that had just been in there, I think.
Oh, really? Then you got half a pizza and some Pinot Grigio, my friend.
Yeah. Unknown pizza and wine, things I don't want.
Yeah, that's true. I know.
and the iron in the room like leaked water all over my shirt when I was kind of trying to give it a quick iron. So then I had to use the room hair dryer to dry off my shirt.
I say again, Michigan, this seems like a Michigan thing. This is not clearly not an isolated.
I think it's just the hotel.
All right.
I think it's somebody else. I don't remember who. I think it might have been the bride was saying that there was something in her fridge as well in the hotel.
She
was staying
hotel.
In the same hotel. She was in the same hotel. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that part of Michigan, other than their weird left turns, just very much like Western New York.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if y'all are familiar with this thing in Michigan where, like, to make a left turn at like a intersection,
mm-hmm.
you have to go. This is when it's like two lanes either way. You mm-hmm. have to go right, and then there will be a spot where you can do like a little U-turn almost to turn mm-hmm. left onto the far side. So that way you're not making a left across like multiple lanes of traffic. If you look up Michigan left, like...
Yeah. I've heard the phrase.
Yeah, it is... I mean, it's to make left turn safer, but also they let you go left on red at those intersections, which I feel kind of half defeats the purpose. But
I don't like that phrase, left on red.
Yeah.
No, my brain just doesn't like it.
Feels real bad. Yeah, I was not aware of it, and then I saw, like, other people doing it, and I'm like, are people crazy, or am I just unaware of the custom?
Yeah.
And is the custom just breaking the law? But no, they're actually, apparently they can actually just do that in those situations.
I like that.
But yeah, it really, it throws me, and it sucks when you just kind of want to, it's a pain. Yeah, yeah.
Especially coming from Buffalo and its infamous left turns and wanting to be so safe in those. His cat, if you're wondering about mine.
His cat.
Oh. Yep.
Yeah, but it was fun. It was great. It was a wonderful wedding. It was very well done. One of my favorites of all time.
Beautiful. Top congratulations to them.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Years of happiness.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how I'm doing.
In conclusion.
That's fine. That's fine. I will confess, I've come into this podcast real hot. I am angry. I am
Oh shoot.
Yeah, I'm having big feelings about a particular video game that released this weekend, and I find it difficult and to the point of frustration, and I'm getting the feeling that it is supposed to be this way and people like it for being this way, and it makes me upset because I've been waiting 4 years for this game and I think I might hate it, and so that's frustrating, and so I'm just having a lot of emotions. Because I was literally like controller hurlingly angry moments before we logged on to this podcast, and surely we will discuss this more later on.
Tim, can we just talk about it now?
We could just talk about Mina the Hollower right now. I'm referring to Mina the Hollower.
After all of that, it would be so funny to table that for a half hour.
I'm going to not say what the game is, but I'm going to unleash all of my opinions about it now. But we'll come back to it later. I've only played like maybe 40 minutes of it, so
same.
I haven't really formulated
started
any
today
kind of opinion on the manor.
I'm referring to the very first boss, quote unquote, that I've just.
That's where the demo ends. So that's like,
what's the throne? I haven't even gotten to it yet.
Yeah. You will soon. That's not really. That is not anything. But like,
yeah,
because I played the demo and. You know, I was like, maybe I'll play the demo to refresh. And then I start the game with the carried over info and it starts you right at the boss battle. I'm like, okay, it's not a bad boss battle. Like, it's pretty easy. So I was like, okay,
pretty
cool.
Easy for just... you to say.
I mean,
this is the, so, I mean, I did get through it. But it just sort of crystallized for me a lot of the sort of vagueness that, and again, I feel like this is intentional, and I feel like with time, I feel like there is an intentional hesitation on the game's part to explain its systems. It feels very anti-Nintendo to me in that it's just not. There's no tutorializing of any kind. It really just throws you in and lets you discover what you can and can't do.
Because I remember it telling me some stuff, so I'm curious what parts are like the frustrating. So is it on the combat side? It sounds like if the boss was of it,
a bit on the combat side and a bit on. I still do not fully understand how the health regaining potions work. It drives me crazy that it's not instant. That while trying to activate that, I can be injured and killed. during that, I feel like the burrowing mechanic is either unreliable or I am just not. Maybe I'm sort of being a little too panicky in timing out, holding down my jumps in order to burrow. Either way, it's really frustrating me at the moment. And again, I know that a lot of people are going to see these as positives. Like, this is the top-down 2D Souls-like that they wanted. And I guess I'm happy for those people. And I'm sure, like, with time, all of this will probably become second nature. But I'm so angry and frustrated at this game right now. I almost, like, I don't want to expose myself to feeling this feeling more. Because it feels like a waste of my life to be this upset. So
your expectations might have gotten in the way of this one too. I'm not entirely sure the 4 years thereof, but I don't know. Like I have no history with Souls. Like, you know, the bones and figuring out like how that works, which as far as I can tell, bones are experience, basically. And, you know, it's...
The bones are their money, so are the words.
So are the words. Yep, exactly. So that gets knocked out. It kind of has... Romeo is a Dead Man almost has, like, the same thing, too, where it's, like, some experience is knocked out of you, but also if you keep it in the bone... like the bone crystal,
the bone jar,
whatever, whatever. The bone jar, you're not going to lose it. Keep it in the bone jar until you need it. I've only played like maybe an hour after that first boss. So basically, I've explored the city and like a tiny bit outside of it. And yeah, it definitely doesn't tell you a lot of stuff. And like, you know, you gave me, Tim texted over. It's just like, be careful. There's no map. And I'm just like, okay, whatever. And I've been in that city for like a long time. It definitely is like, I could use a map in that city. Oh, I definitely hope that is DLC down the road or something. Like just an update. I know. Like I have no problem in the combat areas, like finding my way, or at least I didn't in the, you know, on the way to the first boss, quote unquote.
Did you pick the whip?
I'm curious. Yeah, I picked the whip.
The whip, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so satisfying. And
I kind of thought about doing the hammer, but I was like, the whip just is correct to start. Because
I thought about doing the daggers, because that felt very Zelda 1 to me.
Well, the way I play Souls games a lot lately is heavy weapons.
Heavy is like the new game plus. That's my second run. It's just bashing things.
Yeah, but you can get things. I understand you can just get them at some point. You can buy them. So I'll just buy them.
Like in the demo, you could switch between all three weapons in that area.
That's fun.
But
I figured, the whips just seemed like the most normal, just the thing to start with.
Yeah.
For best results.
Yeah, and I mean, Castlevania.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what I thought looked cool about the game to begin with, like so many years ago.
Yeah, I had it was hard deciding. Like, I switched it to PS5 just because, one, new toy, two, I've just been enjoying sitting on a couch playing on a TV versus the Switch Lite. But boy, I went back and forth on that because this game is so portable, you know.
By default, I started playing it on TV on my Steam Deck, docked. But what I constantly forget about is that I have a large collection of controllers by 8-Bit Do, and for the most part, they are wonderful, high quality, rock solid. But on some of them, they suffer from that from very loose diagonals, and so. Playing this game on that controller with a D-pad just made movement feel very loose. Like I couldn't walk in a straight line without veering diagonally left and right. The Steam Deck built-in D-pad on the Steam Deck is much better in this regard. So playing it portably has been a better experience.
Cool.
Again, in the roughly 45 minutes I got to play.
Oh, you barely started it.
I know, you
play a little bit more and see. But I haven't gotten to that first boss yet. I did see somebody saying that it was difficult, but I don't know.
Well, that was kind of the nice thing of starting it up with whatever I did in the demo, you know, six months ago too, where I'm just sort of like, because having those vials of health is just sort of like, oh, okay. Like, I can go off to the corner, take a sip, get back into it.
Yeah, because if you get hit, then you have to, like, do some damage yourself before you can, like, really adequately heal.
Right. Like, because it rebuilds as you go. So you've got... I have three. I don't know if that's what you start with.
So, yeah. It is. So, yeah, it's like you take a couple big hits, then it's like, okay, now I have to not get hit so I can, like, build it up, and then you take a swig, and then you're... Because, I mean, obviously having to, like, protect yourself when drinking your flask is a very Dark Souls thing. Yeah, because, you have to stop and, like, drink it so you can't be vulnerable or else you'll just get hit again, which will either kill you or the health will come back and then immediately go back down.
Yeah.
So, you know, I am, you know, from Soul's part, I'm just kind of like, yeah, okay, yes, I am used to this. Like, there's already, you know, the things I understand about the bones and like what you lose and what you don't lose, because, you know, Souls has kind of the same thing where you'll pick up items that will, if you use them, you get souls. And in Mina, you can just use that machine to compress them into the thing you don't lose. And some, what do I want to say? I think, Silk Song has a means of doing that as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hollow Knight, yeah, has a thing. You can pack your bells into a thing that, a rosary. That's what they are, the rosaries in the second one. So, yeah, you can.
Oh, can I do it the other direction? I thought I was just grinding the stones.
No, no. Well, only when you level up and you can't afford one of the actual levels. Because the level up system seems to work a little bit kind of like Zelda 2, of all things, where, but it's like when you hit 350, that seems like the baseline. Cause, yeah. You know, I did the first, like, whatever, the attack, health, whatever, the first three, and now they're all 1,000.
Yeah.
So now when I hit 350, it's like, oh, I want to put that into, stock that into a stone. And you can do that on the level up. But also if you go in, like I just now, when I played it for like 5 seconds before I realized I had something else to do earlier, I was in my little den and I was at like 200 bones. And so then I just used the grinder to get 150 to put that back into a stone that I would not lose.
Okay. I have not, have not been storing. I was just going around town going like, okay, what can I afford with these bones? Basically.
That's another thing to do is like, you spend that stuff before you lose it.
That is what I'm used to is like, spend this stuff as fast as you can.
Yep. Yeah. That's the other way to go about it. And that, you know, sometimes is in Souls. It's like, okay, well I have this now is when I go to buy these items. So I at least have something to show for my efforts, if not a level, but
right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much to say about it, other than, you know, it sounds very good, weird.
I was afraid coming in only having, you know, as much as I played, and apparently I played it the most of the three of us.
I only got to, because I, you know, they sent the keys out Thursday, I cashed in the key, the game didn't unlock till midnight, I downloaded it real quick Friday morning. Didn't have time to do it on my lunch break. Then I came home and I had to do a bunch of stuff to prepare for my journey.
Yeah.
And then I did that. And then I had no downtime. And then I was going to sit down and play a little earlier. And then I was like, ah, crap, I have to do this other thing. And then I.
Right.
Yeah. So it just didn't happen. So I think next month I will have a lot more. Well, next time we convene.
Next time we
convene. This is our second May episode. So I guess we're back on track again. well, I'll have a lot more. So, yeah, a lot is about to happen in the next month.
Yeah.
I mean, this is still the game I'm probably going to have time to play, but if other things can get in there.
Yeah, I will say, before I even talk about the stuff I have been playing, it's like, I'm going to be playing this. I'm going to be playing more of Titanium Court. We're going to talk about that in a second. I have heard so many good things about 007 First Light.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. Yeah, even I have heard this.
Because it seemed like tepid. And then as it got, as people actually got to play the game, they were like, oh, this is actually awesome. So that's in that Father's Day weekend, which is going to be a 3-day weekend because of Juneteenth. I am probably going to purchase that game and play a lot of it that weekend, because that's also the weekend when I have nothing going on this month, and the only one that I have nothing going on this month, I think. But yeah, this coming week, actually, after this podcast, is Summer Games Fest, the Keeley's E3 replacement. And all
no idea.
It's like Sony's doing some stuff. Xbox has their showcase. It's like I forget that it's like, oh no, even though E3's dead, they all still pack all their stuff around this. And Xbox will have a showcase next Sunday, which should be interesting with what's gone on at that company in the past few months. Nintendo.
How much of this is just
heavily rumored to have a direct this month.
They'll announce it 48 hours before it happens.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's
just the politics around like all the things that happen with Xbox and the game prices and all that. I'm just afraid of this just being, I don't know, trying to appease people. And just like, what are the games that are?
Yeah. Cause since our had the Switch 2 gone up last time we talked? I don't know if it had. The Switch, I think it was shortly after our last podcast, Nintendo announced that they're raising the Switch 2 price this fall.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yep, yeah. By $50. Only $50, which seems paltry, especially compared to the Steam Decks, which are going up $300. The OLED.
So Steam I'm not Deck. Buying a new system ever.
No. The refurbished LCD Steam Decks are still affordable, but the brand new OLED Steam Decks, the one went from like the high end one went from $650 to $950. Wow. And then like the lower level unit with this less storage went from like $550 to $800, went up $250 or something like that. Like
Jesus.
That's absolutely insane.
And insane. And they remain sold out. They are still in demand, but it's just like
that blows my mind too.
Seeing in the past year, and we've talked a bit about like the PlayStation and Xbox prices going up and the Switch 2 price going up, as I thought it was going to when I decided to buy one last year. I'm like, this is probably the cheapest it's going to be. And that turns out to be the case. I'm just like, man, I think the thing they most need to talk about or not talk about is anything about new hardware. Don't even think about saying anything about PS6 or a next Xbox or anything. You just need to talk about, hey, you know what? Announce games for these consoles for like 2028 and 2029. So people can just be like, okay. You know, just be like, these consoles are going to last a long time. They're going to be supported a long time. You don't need to worry.
Yes.
Just stay where you are. Don't move. You're good. I don't know. I've heard, there's rumors about Nintendo and the Ocarina of Time remake, maybe a thing that is being announced.
That seems like a break in case of bad sales kind of emergency at any time.
Yeah. Well, keep in mind, they have that movie coming out.
Right.
And
right.
They need to have some kind of a Zelda on the Switch 2. And it's, too soon to have a new Tears of the Kingdom. Yeah. That's if they're even going to do another one of those or who knows what. Mm-hmm. This gives them something to do. And it's also the 30-year anniversary of that game this year.
Oh gosh!
Like No. It's like 28.
No, that would be 2028, right?
Yep. Or yes. Be 28. Yep. No, I'm thinking of when the N64 came out. Either way,
gotcha.
That movie's coming out, and we're probably not getting a wholly new Zelda with a new direction for quite a while yet. So, Ocarina, I have heard rumors of the new big FromSoft game being announced possibly at Summer Game Fest, which is a big deal to me.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know what else.
I mean, I think big picture is just seeing state of the industry kind of thing. I don't know. Like, what is AAA right now? What AAA am I looking forward to aside from,
are we looking forward to AAA?
Yeah. I know. I don't know.
Tomorrow's June, and I bought Requiem. That was a $70 game, and I got Pocopia. That was, I think, $60.
Yeah.
And any other games that I've purchased this year have been indie games that were like under 30, under 20,
How much does 007 First Light retail for?
I think it's a 70.
Is it 70? All
right. I would think so. I don't think Amazon's going to go light on that.
Yeah. I just, Pragmata came. I saw that Saros didn't sell very well. Pragmata did, but Saros did not. And it's like,
People are liking Pragmata. I still want to play that demo.
Yep. Yeah, I those are games that are on my radar, but it's just like, $70. Oof.
Yeah. Oh, no. Oof. Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough. And it's no offense to the game. I get that they're expensive to make, but in this economy.
Yeah.
Oof. More and more getting into
make games for the masses.
Games where they're affordable. Which lets me transition to other
things. There we go. I've been playing this month. There it is.
Yeah, anyway, Titanium Court.
All right.
Dave, you son of a bitch.
No,
I know you've played it. You've played it about as much as I have at this point, by the way.
I managed to squeeze in like 12 hours somehow in the past week or so.
Your Steam profile says like 6, but whatever.
No, it really?
Yeah.
It said 12 the last time I
Okay. Well, then maybe it's correct. Oh, maybe in the game it says, yeah, that's more reliable. I don't know. Don't worry about it. Whatever. Yeah, right. It doesn't matter. You've played some. And
see,
I've
because
played
honestly, six quite a bit feels as well. More accurate. I don't see how I could have put 12 hours into this game in the past week.
Yeah. Sometimes the Steam Deck is things get funny, a little fuzzy with like hours played. Yeah, if your Steam Deck is, if you're putting it to sleep and it's not like syncing with the cloud.
Oh,
like,
sure.
Yeah, it kind of, I think it did that to me with, what is it? The Geometry Wars, like, Sectori. Yeah, I think my hours are funky on that because of that, but that's not important. Titanium Core. The important thing is that you did play a good amount of it.
Yeah.
To talk about.
It's a weird ass game. And again, a little bit alienating in its own way, and yet I keep feeling compelled to come back to it, even though it is really, really difficult for me to articulate what I like about it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's such an odd game. What are your feelings?
So for me, and so what this game is, to be clear. So it's like you are seemingly like a real world person who is dropped into a court of fairies, the Titanium Court, like this fantasy world that has its own kind of rules and regulations. And all the fairies, they just look like people, like mm-hmm. pretty much. But concepts like cars and sports are kind of foreign to them.
I see.
And you are, you're dropped into this court and they immediately appoint you as the queen of the court. And this plays in the court will become under attack on a daily basis. And there's sort of like two phases to that, which they call high tide and low tide. And during high tide, you'll be on like this 7x7, tile grid, and there will be like forests and plains and water, and then there will be like enemy forts that are going to spawn units, and that part you play like a match three game.
Yeah, that's, I was watching a muted trailer while you guys brought that up.
So as you match things, like if you match three forests, you get wood. If you match three waters, you get some water. You get resources out of matching those things, or you just take enemy castles and stuff off the board. And things can cascade and combo, and you can only do so many moves during high tide, and doing combos lets you do a few more. You can only move to make a match unless you're moving your castle. You can move that one space in any direction if you need to do some fine maneuvering. So it's like kind of during that phase, you are collecting resources and you are also setting the
positioning yourself.
Yeah. Strategically setting up the battlefield, trying to do that in an advantageous way for the battle to come. And then when it's low tide, then, you can see kind of on the bar when enemies are going to be deployed from different places around the map. And you can deploy your own units using the resources that you earn there.
Tower
and
defense style.
Yes.
Yeah. And they deploy and they go to, you don't get to tell them where to go. They just go to where they want to go.
Those little fuckers.
Which can be frustrating. Can definitely be problematic.
Yes.
And you'll fight the battle and you have to keep the health of your castle up. And if it gets destroyed, then you fail the run and you wake up the next morning and take a shower. But you're trying to make it up like this battlefield of like six different battles. And then there's like a boss at the end. There's shops and other things, enhancements, it's like roguelikey, and that like every run, each, you can actually get give your court a different job, which will give it different starting units and different things. But then when you go back to the castle, there's like all this other stuff going on that's kind of like a adventure-y visual novel type game where you're trying to unravel, and this is where I heard the comparison to Blue Prince. This is where it starts to feel a little Blue Prince-y, in that you're trying to you will have objectives that you need to fulfill, and you're trying to get out of the court seemingly, and you need to find ultimately like a certain amount of these keys that you lost, and there's different ways to get them, and so you get to explore the court. You can talk to your
courtiers,
the other fairies there. Yeah, and there's like different events and stuff that will pop up, and it's just the story is what's compelling me through the game because it's so weird, and interesting, and I want to know exactly like what is going on.
I also
a lot of times. Yeah, I was gonna say a lot of time. Go on.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was gonna say a lot of time. My actual gameplay is interesting enough, but a lot of time my runs end and I'm just like a little bit frustrated because I'm so close to like clearing the run and it's like, oh no, like one guy got through on the battlefield and ticked down my court, and while everyone else was somewhere else on the battlefield, not taking care of that one guy. And then, you know, you lose and then it just says, okay, on the screen. And that's like my exact feeling. I'm just like,
okay,
okay. All right. And then I usually put the game down. I don't play it and I don't do like multiple runs in a session. I usually just do one. And then if it ends in tears, then it's like, okay. And then I'll, you know, pick it up later.
That's the point at which I tend to keep playing because even after failure, and I think this is what this is definitely, I think, a positive about the game is that even when you fail a run, it's almost as if the narrative is very intelligently course corrects you into either doing a real good job seamlessly advising you how to do better in the next run or offering you the opportunity to get some buffs or else like sort of telling you. Early on, there's a run where you face a dragon. And you're given the choice of either you can face the dragon or you can buy the dragon off and avoid the conflict altogether. And I bought the dragon off and completed the run. And so was a victory, I happened to be money bags on that run. So I was like, fine, I'm almost at the end of this run. I don't want to take a chance. I'm going to beat this run. So I did. So I just bought the dragon off so I wouldn't have to face it. And then the narrative builds in that like, oh, actually, you know what? You need to experience the dragon fire in order to progress.
Yes, like you do.
So like whether it's success or failure, the narrative is sort of steadily guides you so that even failure doesn't necessarily feel like failure. And then it's got that sort of difficulty scaling system built in where you can either increase the strife or you can get some passive buffs by making it, what's the word? What do they say?
Comfort.
Comfort, yeah, you can.
Yeah, you're mucking with the thermostat. Basically,
you're mucking with the thermostat. Yeah,
yeah, to make it easier or harder.
I can't tell if the writing is clever or pretentious. I can't say I'm not enjoying it, but there are times when I definitely am like, does this person just feel like they're just a very, very clever video game writer, and like they wanted to write this story, but they just happened to make it a video game instead of a book? I don't know. And Weiss, when Tim says fairies. The names of the fairies are specifically in reference to Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream. Slash gargoyles.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so it finally occurred to me that Titania is the queen of the fairies, and that's probably where Titanium Court is derived from.
That makes sense. And also, thank you, Megaten, for helping with some of those.
Yep.
The
game, it's not like discouraging me to stop playing when a run goes down. I'm just kind of like, oh, that's a good like stopping point. Because, the game, it seems like you are just going to keep progressing and finding ways to progress. I get the feeling that like you can get to credits and kind of finish the game like without a ton of brain power effort.
Yeah.
But then it has a, you know, like an Animal Well or like Blueprints type deal where it's like, but then there's all this other stuff you could do if you want to keep like pulling at the threads of the game to see what falls out. But I don't know yet. I still got lots of stuff to do. But it is really interesting. I do like the look of it. I feel like it's pretty striking.
Very Apple II GS look.
Lots of
pinks and yellows.
Mm-hmm. Really, really pops out there.
I like that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's Detour into Mina the Hollower time, but maybe I'll pop. I'll probably imagine perhaps I will get frustrated at Mina at some point and want to kick over to Titanium Court. But also at the same time, I was playing Titanium Court, and at one point I was getting kind of frustrated with that. And I was like, I just want to play something different right now. which led me down this path where I was just kind of like thumbing through my Steam Deck library and being like, oh, you know what? I'm gonna install Dark Souls 3 on here because I've been watching Elden Ring Bingo again, and so I've been kind of getting hungry for it. So like, yeah, I'll throw Dark Souls 3 on here. I probably won't like get into it that much. But then I got through the first area and I was like, oh, I am kind of feeling this right now. Dark Souls 3 is the one I haven't replayed much at all because my kid was one. I actually played Bloodborne, like finished Bloodborne like a week before Dark Souls 3 came out just because of the timing. I played Bloodborne like a year late. So I had played a lot of Souls at the time, so I didn't really spend a ton of time with Dark Souls 3. And then, you know,
I feel like 3 is the one. I get the impression 3 is the one that people kind of don't talk about much. I feel like I hear very little of it on the outside.
Okay. I mean, it's very good. Dark Souls 2 is the black sheep.
Oh, okay. I guess I always thought it was 3.
By far. No. Dark Souls 3 is considered very good.
Oh, okay.
2 is the one that is much more divisive.
Oh, okay.
Similar to Dave, I was going like, right, they made a third one. I never hear people talk about it.
Yeah. Well, it came out after Bloodborne. And Bloodborne is the thing that people talk about, you know, nonstop. Yeah. And, you know, Dark Souls it's not exactly a watershed moment for the series. It's Dark Souls 3, the third one. So it does have some mechanics that start showing that really they expand on in Elden Ring, but then it was, you know, it was Bloodborne, then Dark Souls 3, then they did Sekiro, then they did Elden Ring. So I get it. It doesn't stand out, but either way, I was like, you know, I finished the first area and I was like, oh, wow, I'm kind of feeling this. And then I was like, okay, I want to play a little bit on my PC. And it's like, oh, it doesn't have cloud save support. Crap.
Really?
Yeah. Because it's old enough that they just never gave it cloud save support.
Huh.
For whatever reason. They just never patched it in, whatever. And I was like, oh, crap. Because I'm like, there's going to come a boss that I want to play on a controller.
Oh, I'm sorry. You were playing on, you started it on console. Is that what you're saying?
The game? No. I started on my Steam Deck.
Oh.
Yeah. And Steam Deck doesn't have cloud saves so that I could just kick the save over to play it here on my PC.
Really?
Yes, really.
That seems so odd.
It does seem odd, but I thought you can't do it. So I'm like,
just a branded thing on Steam.
Steam. It is not. They have to enable it for the game to be able to cloud save. Which then led me to the next thing that had already been in the back of mind. I'm like, well, because initially I started, I was like, oh, I just kind of want to muck around. I'm not really going to get into it. Because if I was going to get into it, I should play on the version that I have that actually has the DLC that I've never played, which is the PlayStation version. So yeah, one thing led to another. And now I'm just playing through that game on PS5 on the Dark Souls trilogy version that was released at some point for PS4.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm like halfway through the game now. I think played quite a bit of Dark Souls 3 this past month. Yeah, it's really good.
How many hours is that?
Well, for me now, it's like 11.
Okay.
It took me 60 hours to get through that game to begin with. I imagine I'll finish it by 20 or 25 hours. Okay. It's always faster once I kind of have a feel of what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I'm not going through these, even though it was 10 years ago. I still have kind of the echoes of how to do. I don't know. It's just, you know, there's skills you build up over time with these games.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm fighting bosses very easily just because there's a certain cadence to how FromSoft has their enemies attack and the timing of it and these battles that I'm just way better at now. After 100 plus hours of Elden Ring and more Demon Souls and Dark Souls and et cetera.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it's.
So, yeah, I'm having a great time with it. It's great. It's really good. And then I'll play.
Getting a theme of games from 10 years ago already. I'm waiting for like a third one to pop in.
Mine's from 20 years ago.
I don't have one. Yeah.
My comfort game that I'm going back to right now is Twilight Princess. Thanks to the release of Dusk, the Twilight Princess decompilation for PC and Android and iOS and everything under the sun. Wouldn't be surprised if there's a PlayStation Vita version coming soon. I was waiting so long for Nintendo to just finally re-release the Wii U versions of Wind Waker and Twilight Princess. And this version is so good. that I've stopped caring about Nintendo doing it, because this version gives you so many options to experience the game the way that you want it. You can have it be right-handed or left-handed, depending on whether you originally played the GameCube or the Wii version. You can upscale it to whatever resolution you want, and it maintains a constant 60 frames per second. It doesn't break the game logic. You can add texture packs if you want. I am playing with the original textures so that I can sort of experience the artwork as close to it originally was, just upscaled a little bit. But if you want, you can add in the Wii U textures, or you can add in any number of homemade textures that people have taken the original textures and up-res them to 4K naturally. It's just great. It's the best way to play this game. And I guess what's funny, I'm loving it as sort of a nostalgia comfort, but it's also my first time going back to back to the way Zelda was before Breath of the Wild. And I'm finding it surprisingly hard, I guess. Like, there was so much I was like, we've had two of these now, Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. Maybe it would be nice if the next one was a return to the standard, to the classic, Eiji Aonuma formula of 3D Zeldas. But going back to it, I just find myself so... limited is probably the wrong word. Especially
since, I was going to use.
Well, okay. I think among us, I probably have the softest spot for Twilight Princess.
I wasn't even going into that. I'm just more thinking the.
But just revisiting sort of the history of where it happened and why it happened and why it was received so warmly at first, but then the tide against it turned so swiftly. At the time I played it, it was everything. It corrected everything I didn't like about Ocarina of Time, which is a game that I've never fallen in love with. And though I genuinely loved Wind Waker and still do, it also course corrected for the little things that one could reasonably complain about in that game. Namely, just sort of that it's an ocean in place of an overworld. But then the wisdom of that ocean overworld starts to show through in a game like this, because in the Ocarina Majora's Mask Twilight Princess model, just the concept of going from these discrete areas, these like, here's a chunk of map and then we have to turn a corner and then everything fades out so that RAM can load in the next chunk of area, and then even if it's a very large chunk of area, there's very like Hyrule Field, there's nothing going on there. It is just a barren wasteland. There's like three enemies floating around there to interact with, but either way, and then there's, maybe some caves on the periphery, but it just feels so lifeless and so not as dense. The activity is not dense in the same way that not only Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom succeed at in 3D, but also the previous games, the way the Game Boy games and Link to the Past also were very... you can't take three steps without there being something interesting to interact with. So it is definitely sort of this is just the way it was for about 10 years, just being in a large environment and there's just a lot of open space and this is the way it was. Okay.
I was going to say, do we think, cause I feel like most people like Twilight Princess.
I honestly have no idea.
I don't know. Maybe divisive is just the word.
I think. Contemporaneous Okami reviews were glowing. Came out, very shortly after, and sort of showed what could be done with that formula. And then Darksiders, I think, came out the very next year and took it in yet another direction. And so Twilight Princess very quickly got, while contemporaneously in 2005 when it was released, people were like, yes, this is exactly what we want from Zelda at this time. Something that updates and modernizes the clunkiness of Ocarina of Time, but also accounts for the complaint, and again, contemporaneously, a lot of those complaints about sure. Wind Waker were unreasonable, but also the more legitimate complaints that you could reasonably make about Wind Waker's design. They corrected that and said, like, okay, well, we're instead of that, we're going to do this to give the players a different experience. And so in a lot of ways, Twilight Princess sort of represents the, I don't want to say the apex or not the best version of that quadrilogy, but certainly the most refined and iterated of that particular style of Zelda, the quadrilogy that consists of Ocarina, Majora, Wind Waker, and Twilight Princess. It's definitely the one at which they, you know, this was their fourth try to just iterate on what had been done before starting over, essentially, with Skyward Sword and pleasing no one.
I don't know if this is perfect, but Skyward I feel like you see Twilight Princess as Aria of Sorrow, and we're kind of seeing it as like Dawn of Sorrow. Like, that's I'm kind of feeling like Twilight Princess is kind of the beginning of the, like, the Igavanias have gone on a little long.
No, I think that is sort of I think that's an excellent way to look at it in retrospect. Likewise, though, I think you could certainly say mm-hmm. that Dawn of Sorrow is, on a technical level, the most iterated upon version
yeah.
of that.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of why. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it technically it has been refined to sort of gameplay perfection, even if creatively it's where it starts to be like, oh, okay, the very start starts to feel same old, so.
Yeah. No, and like Twilight Princess, I do want to replay because it's always been soiled from mm-hmm. The fucking Wiimote control. Mm-hmm. like the motion controls were terrible. That did no service to that game.
Yeah, no, I was very lucky that I only ever played the GameCube version because I found it on clearance in the days where you could find wonderful things at Kmart on clearance mm-hmm. and those glorious couple of years when you could roll into Kmart with a printed out spreadsheet from yeah. a cheap ass gamer. That was one of my, yeah.
And find clearance they didn't even know was on clearance.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's
tell them what the prices were.
Right, when you could find secrets. Yeah, definitely yeah. have been nostalgic for Goose X days.
Yeah. And such. But anyway, this yeah. is almost inarguably the best way to play Twilight Princess. Mm-hmm. I can't wait for them to do this for Wind Waker, too, because I'm certain that will be the best way to play Wind Waker as well.
Yeah.
Nice.
And you know what? They even let you adjust the bloom. Which is, you know, and that was kind of the big complaint about Wind Waker HD on Wii U is that just the excessive lighting bloom. A lot of people said it sort of ruined the stylistic intent of the game. So having a version okay. where you would be able to select exactly how much lighting bloom you want might
yeah.
be, you know, imagine all the benefits of Wind Waker HD, but you get to choose the flatter graphic style. So, yeah, really, really. Hoping that will be next on the decompilation list. But until then, yeah, it's been fascinating to just go back to this point in Zelda and sort of take note of both its strengths and its flaws.
Mm-hmm. God, 20 years ago, best, that makes you want to throw up.
Yeah, I know.
runs great in the Android version runs great. Too runs perfectly, so you can play it handheld. It's awesome.
La-di-da. Yeah. I was actually kind of like I didn't really do much work. I was like looking into that Android phone, Steam Deck, whatever business.
Yeah.
And seeing that people were like, "Oh, the pixels aren't really good for that," which is the phones that I, you know, the most
Google Pixels. Yes,
I Google Pixels.
Yeah, their chipset apparently is apparently not the best.
Yeah, not
for
good. And then I have like some older. Samsung Galaxy phones, like maybe like an S6 or something. I don't know if that. Yeah,
I'm sure my OnePlus would be good for it. Just haven't dove in
because I switched over.
OnePlus mm-hmm. is supposed to, you know, anything with a Snapdragon processor that's got the best graphic driver support. So a OnePlus would be great. I'm looking at used Samsung Galaxies from about anywhere from 10 to 20. Because I would still want one that still had an SD card slot, which I think got removed after 20.
Yeah.
Because even though, you know, the phone I have, it's got like a MediaTek Helio or something, maybe a Dimensity, I think, which is fine. It's actually plenty powerful to do a lot of stuff. It's just graphic driver support.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't need that for myself. I have a Steam Deck, but I was like, maybe the kid could get something out of this, but no, he can not for now.
Other games for Vooz.
That's it for me.
All right. Yeah. Oh, okay. Let me run through some Game Pass stuff. Mm. I forgot last time we talked to talk about Vampire Crawlers.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I had played some of that before our last thing. So this is Vampire Crawlers is the Vampire Survivor skinned, like sort of dungeon crawler card game deal.
Mm-hmm.
It plays more like a Slay the Spire type thing where you're picking up cards and playing cards and then it does anything like Vampire Survivor specifically, but it has like a lot of the Vampire Survivors like window dressings of like those characters who have voice acting, which is very weird.
Ooh. Oh, that's weird.
And you know, going through those same places that just kind of as a first person dungeon, that's when you actually get into a battle. It's like you are trying to play cards to combo them up to do a bunch of damage. And as you pick up cards, like you can fuse them, they have the same fusion table as Vampire Survivors. And those that will transform, you'll put two cards together and it'll make a different card. But basically, like, you know, each card has a certain value of like 0, 1, 2, 3. And if you play them in order, it does an increasing amount of damage. So that's how you want to build your combos.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. It hasn't really, you know, it's, I don't know. It's, I played like a few hours of it. It's pretty good. It's not just, I just, you know, it hasn't grabbed me that much to just kind of stick with it. But that's the fun of a Game Pass game, I guess.
Can I take a moment to note just how
point, like going through and doing the battles gets a little bit tedious, just because like once I get kind of the swing of my combos, it's okay. It's just like boom 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 boom, and I want to do all of them to get as much experience as possible. But it's a good game, and it has kind of the same unlock system where you finish a run, you'll get a bunch of achievements because now you've unlocked like some different weapons or new characters to try out. So it keeps you in the loop that way too. So like it is good.
Looking at
PlayStation Plus since.
All right. Hey, I played through Mixtape.
Tim, what? Wait, I think maybe you're not hearing me.
I can't hear you guys. Did I pull my thing out?
Okay.
That's why I can't hear you guys.
Oh, okay. That's why I was like, all right, you're on a roll. Oh, I had transitioned at one point and then you kept going. I'm like, okay, that's fine. And then Dave came back to. So like,
wow, Tim, this is really steamrolling right over Weezer. This won't let him get a word in edgewise. What the hell?
I was like, my bad. Tired. Let's go. No, I was
I'm like, wow, these guys aren't coming in with anything right now.
Yeah, I'm just sort of like, no, ooh, reaction. I actually have something to add to this. No, I was just looking at like the, you know, PlayStation Plus ever since, because, you know, I played Alan Wake 2 off of that. So every month I'm just sort of like, okay, I'll dip back in. What dog shit? Like, it's just like every month it's like Warhammer 40K, a sports game. I don't know, like, is that what it has been?
Yeah.
Like, was Alan Wake 2 really that much of an anomaly month?
I think it was, I mean, I'd say we're beyond the glory years of PlayStation Plus, but even in the final years of my subscription, it was really starting to feel like the two weekly free games on the Epic Games Store, you know, like,
okay,
so some indie game. And you know, but it always still felt worth it because every 6 months or so you'd get either something that is like, oh, universally like, oh yes, that's a big hit that anyone would want to play, or alternatively, oh, that is an indie game that has been on my radar that I've been wanting to check out. But, I'd say that's par for the course.
It's just kind of like, as a service, I'm just surprised like it's even going at this point. That's the offerings. Here's a tangent.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a reason why I stopped subscribing to that. Like, quite a while ago. Which then threw me when I was playing Dark Souls 3. And I'm like, oh, I don't have, I don't have online for this game. I don't, I don't get to see all the messages and ghosts running around. But I also don't get to get invaded, so that's nice to die.
Oh, that's nice.
But yeah, but I also can't summon people in for bosses, so I have to solo them. It's fine. I mean, whatever. If and when a new From game comes out, then I'll have to buy some PlayStation Plus for a while again, because it's just more fun that way. Anyways.
Yes, yes.
Before I discovered I was interrupted. it's like McCord got in my armpit here and just pulled it out just enough. Like nothing. Yeah, I didn't know. Yeah, anyway, I played.
Hey, at least it wasn't like cutting her. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you got mixtape. Yep.
Yeah. Is well, it was on PlayStation Plus, or not PlayStation Plus. No, not the
Game Pass.
It was on Game Pass. Yes, it was on Game Pass. Mixtape was on Game Pass. I did really like Mixtape in the end. Like off the bat, you know, as the game is starting, it definitely grated on me a little bit with, like, you know, this teen kid who's like so far up her own ass about how much she knows about music and loves music and like is talking straight to the camera in a very like John Cusack and High Fidelity sort of way. But you know, that's the point, is that it's a, so yeah, the gist of the game is that, you know, this girl has put together her perfect mixtape for her last day with her like high school friends before she goes off to New York to become the greatest music producer in the history of the world. You know, from her little small town in like Northwest, like California or Oregon or Washington or something like that.
Pacific Northwesty. Yeah.
Yeah. Pacific Northwesty. And the, you know, the game, you know, sells itself as having the soundtrack of a generation.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. But it's, you know, at its heart, you know, it is a, you know, even if I can't relate directly to the story of her and her friends that are, you know, it is a small town and they're just like, okay, well, we need to get booze for the party tonight. The teenage party. And this is the, you know, what we do. We are ne'er-do-wells who commit minor crimes and stuff like that. But, you know, even if that wasn't like our experience when we were leaving high school, like it's relatable to, you know, we had our own experiences that I can like draw a line to that.
Sure.
Even if that's not what it's like, yeah, there's like a scene with them like just hitting baseballs like at night at a, you know, at a baseball field out of a machine. I'm just like, okay, I didn't do that. But, you know, me and George did like hit golf balls off the beach into the lake one night, which is, you know, kind of a similar idea. And like, there wasn't a lot of trespassing at the time. There was a lot more once we were making movies. There was trespassing like all the time.
Yeah, we were the ones doing it.
Yeah absolutely. So you'll have like the, you know brings up a song title card, she'll talk about the song and it plays the background of a scene, which could, you know, just be like kind of like walking out around a room, like looking at things that will bring up memories. And then there will be like little kind of basically like mini games you'll play. And it's frictionless, you know, you're not really trying to accomplish anything with those games. It's just ways of interacting with the story. And it's a lot of fun. Like it's 3 hours. You know, I put
shorter than I thought, actually.
Like Gone Home and Edith Finch's like top tier, like walking simulator type games. There's some stuff that's, you know, really fun to play in there, just really visually striking or works really well with the music. You know, in total, there was really only one song that I really, really knew very, very well. That was part of the actual mixtape. Then there was a little bit of another song that I also knew very well. The guy who made this game goes by Johnny Galvatron. Guess what his favorite 80s movie might be? Is it the same one as me? So that's a lot of fun. But yeah, no, I think it's super worth checking out.
I don't even remember now what the big discourse about it was.
Like, about this?
Yeah.
I don't remember there being discourse in general. I just remember that seeing that trailer a bunch.
Oh, no, people are mad about it.
Big time. Oh, are there women or people of color or something? gay people? I don't know.
There are women.
Existing? How dare
just
they?
Existing?
Well, it's another thing similar to Gone Home where it's like, oh, this isn't a video game. Like, you know, you don't do anything in it.
You know, like why does it have to? I don't know. I think you get the idea. You're interacting with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's still, it's not a movie. And you know, the gameplay sequences enhance everything. And yeah, Richard really enjoyed watching me play it, even though they use potty words quite a bit and stuff. But like, yeah, he kind of sees like I was sending him off to like bed. He's like, oh, no, I want to be here while you're playing it. And I'm like, okay, you know what? Yeah, no, we'll just play through this.
Nice.
You know, you can watch it. It's cool. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I played a little bit of Forza Horizon 6.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never really been. So I played like a little bit of Forza Horizon 5 and stopped because I'm just, I don't know. I don't know. These games look great.
Yeah,
and people say that, you know, the Horizon games are the more arcadey of the Forza games. That's what they say. Still feels very Gran Turismo-y to me, though.
Yeah.
Like with the handling of the cars and the, yeah, when they're talking about tuning and like, you know, I don't want to think about like, should I buy a Toyota Corolla to race with? That's just not how my brain works or approaches these games.
Yeah, I've never liked the handling in the Forza Horizon series. I've always wished it was a little more arcadey because they do look beautiful, and everyone says the structure of the games is a lot of fun. I just, the handling is still so simulation.
Yeah, I feel like people call it more arcadey, but I don't think they know what that means. I'm like, no,
maybe it is compared to Forza Motorsport.
Yeah, I guess. I will say, I think I only really had one sitting with it, but there's like, the thing that really stood out to me is there's like some off-road races, and those were a lot of fucking fun.
Yeah.
Like not on the road, just like driving a truck through the countryside, like looked really cool, like big jumps going over hills and stuff.
That was
like
nice
driving a Ford F-150. That was fun. So I don't know. I might poke into it a little more, see if I can kind of, it's the thing where it's like, you know, they put the racing line down there and this racing line, it shows you like where you want your car to go, and it's color coded to like if you need to brake, so it can be green, you're on lines, you're approaching a turn, it starts to go orange to red if you're going really fast, and like that's when you want to start to brake so you can hit the turn, and then as it goes back to green, you're good to make the turn. But at that point it's like, yeah, I'm doing it. And I suppose, you know, it's teaching me, but I also feels like very training wheels. Like, oh, if I just push the buttons to make the line the right color, I'll be fine.
And even my issue with it is that even then, you know, it's that handling that is ever so that's just leans far enough into simulation that you cannot take a turn at breakneck speed. You can't drift, really. You have to do exactly what you're describing. Follow the racing line, break into the turn, start accelerating again. And it feels so slow. It feels like you're taking every turn so painfully slow. And that's when every car just blazes right past me. And it feels like, well, I have to take it easy, but it sure doesn't seem like my AI opponents are. So what is the secret here? What am I missing? There must be a way to take these turns faster and maintain my speed. And I get frustrated and I'm like, nope, fuck this.
Yeah. When was the last time you played one of them?
I think it was the very first Forza Horizon.
Okay. Well, that was a while ago.
It was. So, but I don't think they've changed that much since
then. Yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah. Like I said, this is the first definitely the most time I've spent with one was really just an hour that I spent with six. So I might keep picking at to see if I can find the magic. And of course, like the whole like festival social media atmosphere of it is obnoxious, and I can't stand it. Like you complain about mixtape and you're gonna like just give this a pass? Like, come on now. So we'll see. I could see next month I've played it maybe a bunch more or not at all. The only other thing I want to mention that I played, which I dove into very quickly.
It sounds very conspiratorial. Like you're putting on.
No, you're only telling us. This is not a. Not a podcast.
Don't usually.
Listen, I hope nobody else is paying attention to this right now, but you guys.
I don't.
Sidebar?
That is definitely because I'm tired. I don't usually grab games that are in early access. And this wasn't really on my radar to really do. But so you guys heard of Dead as Disco?
I've heard
Heard that name. Is that a rhythm?
It is a rhythm beat 'em up.
Yeah. Yep. Yes.
That you can put your own songs into.
I always go back and forth with, I mean, like, cool.
Yeah.
But so, like, half of the fun is getting new music sometimes, too.
No, absolutely. No.
Yeah.
But it is specifically in, like, the challenge mode. So it's separate from the main
story. Okay. Cool.
Like, the game has its own soundtrack that you know, and stuff to play through, but it has this other side thing where you can just kind of do a challenge and put a song in there and whatever. Because I was just like, well, I absolutely have to be the first person on the planet to beat people up rhythmically to Billy Gunn's theme, Mr. Ass.
Oh, sure.
From the late 90s and just start plugging wrestling themes into this one. And like, man, Kanosuke Takeshita's theme works really well beating dudes up. Just like very, very, very good. And just kind of plugging things in there, tweaking the settings and trying to get it to line up. And it just like, as soon as I saw, I did not realize that. And I was like, actually saw a clip of someone playing a song from Anarchy Reigns. And like, I was like, oh, this looks fucking awesome.
Yeah, that Mad World soundtrack is still amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's the thing, because aside from just the fact that it's cool to plug your music in there and do things to it, like I think this game seems to be really onto some shit with like basically like rhythm based like Batman Arkham Asylum style beat 'em up combat. Like it feels really good, just like hitting the attacks on the beat, and then someone comes in and you counter or dodge, and then it has like if you flick the stick or something, you'll like jam up and throw like an interstitial dance move in there. And then, so you have ways to fill space, in between hits. It's just an early access right now. But it seems very promising.
I will definitely check that out if I can.
Yeah.
Probably on a system that I can't load music into, but you know,
that's the thing.
Add this to my wish list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Weiss, you play anything else?
No, I just had Mina on this one. Haven't gotten back to the play date, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's only been a few weeks. Maybe it's a long month. Richard keeps being like, it's still May. Like, is it today? It's still May. I'm like, yeah, it's still May. Like, technically, saying we went on that vacation to downstate was a month ago. Last month is true. Your birthday was this month, dude. Like, it's been a long month.
It's almost over, son. It's almost over.
It's almost over. I've got one movie that's probably not the movie you guys have seen.
I saw two movies.
Oh, you saw two? So it might have been. Then it might have been one of them. But we'll see.
Gosh. What movie did you see, Weiss?
I saw I Love Boosters, of course.
Oh, of course.
Yes. Not sure if... would be able to, obviously not for kids and perhaps either of your spouses. I'm not entirely sure either.
I can commit. Jen did not appreciate.
Sorry to bother
thank you for sorry to bother you. I think as much as I
okay.
Did.
I mean, I had a good time, but there's but also there. Much like Sorry to Bother You, there are some left turns that I think I'm so amused in this one because, like, Sorry to Bother You was pretty indie under the wire. I Love Boosters is getting a lot of attention.
Yeah.
So I think a lot more people, it's not a mainstream movie. It's still an indie movie, but I saw it in a Regal.
Yeah.
You know, and I think a lot of people are going into it. And I don't think a lot of those people have seen Sorry to Bother You. And I do not think audiences are very surprised is all I'm going to say.
Well, I think Sorry to Bother. I'm a little surprised because the publicity for this film doesn't seem to be quite as clear as the publicity for Sorry to Bother You. And I am certain that in the publicity for Sorry to Bother You, they kind of decided upon mm-hmm. what to hinge
yeah.
the advertisements. And it seems like a really great, that particular hook, which is obviously not really what the movie is about, but like,
right.
it's the hook of a black guy talks white to advance in his career is a right. very classic, like almost Richard Pryor, Gene Wilder comedy mm-hmm. upon which to hang. You're like, that could have been a real mainstream hit just based on that premise. And,
yeah.
you know, and yes, and it takes boosters. Big left turns.
Oh, yeah. I mean, kind of similar in that I Love Boosters is almost sold like almost like Spring Breakers or like a, you know, like fun heist, poppy heist kind of movie, you know, like ethical Robin Hood kind of heist movie.
I didn't know what it was about until I
read.
Really? Like all of the media that I've seen, all of the... To be honest, I haven't sat down and watched like an entire trailer, but like the commercials that come on in between streaming yeah. shows give very little idea about what this movie is about, other than that it looks very stylized and very...
What commercials are...
Like streaming services. What have I been watching?
Oh, lately? Okay.
I've been watching... Yeah, so Hulu, Disney Plus, Netflix.
I see.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, I had no idea what this movie was about until I...
Oh, yeah, a lot, at least like the first trailer, because I don't know if I saw the second trailer, but it's explaining like what boosters were stealing from the rich to sell our own like clothing, high-end clothing sort of thing. And like now he has a budget. So as impressive visually as Sorry to Bother You was, everything is like... immaculate. Yeah, it's just a visual, like the entire time we're just going, oh, it's just like nodding every time like the shot changes.
Yeah,
and it's all practically done. There's mixed media in there. There's because he worked with this animation company when he did I'm a Virgo for Amazon, which is great, right. that everybody missed. And then it's just like likes working with those guys. So now he's finding a place to like use their animation in this. And, you know, it's cool seeing Lakeith Stanfield, you know, as Sorry to Bother You was kind of his breakout movie as the main character. And now he's just kind of a like a Lothario. Is that like a pop in, Boba Fett kind of has like a little bit pops in and out of the movie sort of thing. Yeah, but also you're going like, wow, you're a star. It is a lot of movies kind of jammed into one. I think like that's a fair complaint about it, but also I like all of those movies. So like it's not like it comes to a perfect thematic head, but it is a wild ride. Like I had a great time with it. It's definitely one of my faves I've seen this year.
I can't remember if I've seen people describing it as more or less accessible than Sorry to Bother You. Not that Sorry to Bother You was inaccessible necessarily, because again, I think it is premised on this very easy to grok concept that should
I think it
drawn
eases you in. Yeah.
It just goes places.
Well, it's so hard because they're both very interesting rhythmically, because I think Sorry to Bother You takes that left turn in the third act.
Yeah,
like you are very far into the movie.
Yeah.
I Love Boosters has like one of those towards the center and definitely goes off a little earlier, but you're kind of along for the ride. I don't know. I feel like he eases you in with both. Like you do get a good sense of like I think Sorry to Bother You, I was kind of more into the relationship with like Lakeith's journey, but like the, you know, you've got your three and then four, it's almost like a Three Musketeers-y kind of thing. Like Demi Moore is on fire right now, and I was kind of I was so curious how she was going to be coming right off of The Substance into this. And like, you know, this is second stage of her career. Great. sort of thing. So just plays an outstanding villain. Like, at no point do you want her to do anything good. But yeah, I mean, if you're going in for the incredible, like, staging and colors, and, you know, if it doesn't get costuming or at least a nod, that's going to be insane at this point. And yeah, music's great. Catchy as hell. I know they've released some of it, but, well, they've released all of it. It is a weird soundtrack to drive to in traffic, but it's a lot of weird sounds going on. But it's very interesting to see this close to mainstream, and also just wears its anti-capitalism on its sleeve, you know, and very leftist anti-corporation, you know, like, not shy about it at this point. So
I might see if I can catch this one while my girls are still in school and I have daytimes free to go to the movies by myself.
That would
probably be the other movie that would coincide it. It's out now. I could see it with no one else. No one else in my family would want to see it. So yeah, I should.
I will. I will be seeing Mando if it's still in theaters, but I have not yet. So I assume you guys have.
Yes. I did. Okay, you did too, Tim. All right.
Did you take
the boy?
Yeah. We all went.
All right.
I dragged the boy. He didn't want to go.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, he's not that into Star Wars.
Okay.
Or it just kind of comes and goes. I don't know. Yeah. He did say he was like, "Oh, that was pretty good." At the end of it, he enjoyed it.
Yeah. Julia really wanted to go. Julia has been away in Washington D.C. all week on her 8th grade Washington D.C. trip that kids take in 8th grade. And she really wanted to go see it, and she has not seen the show. I had no idea. I'm like, "Why? What you do?"
Yeah, I don't think that's the correct decision.
Kind of how I'm going to go into it. I don't know if I'll have time to watch the show.
I know Star Wars. If you're familiar enough of the characters and cuz I mean, to me, Dave, what'd you think of it in like a word or two?
I thought it was
fine. Okay, yeah, no, it was cool. Yeah, no, exactly. The way I look, the comparison that I made when we got out of the theater is, I was like, it was like an anime OVA, like a Dragon Ball Z movie, like your Tree of Might or a Naruto movie, where it is, you know, completely separate from the canon. It is just kind of a little adventure for the characters, you know, to do the things that you love them doing and really not change anything. To just set the thing back down without much change to it.
And that,
I mean, you never know. Yeah.
That's the thing that I kind of waffled on. And I know that Mandalorian grew to be super divisive, and I know that apparently its box office
it's fucking Star Wars.
so it is, I really had to sort of think back and ask myself, what is it we expect from a TV series that gets turned into a movie? What is the thing that we insist that it does differently from the TV, especially now in this era where production value of live action genre television is often at, or at least within striking distance of movie, you know, of feature film production quality? Like, what is it we are asking for?
Even rephrase that to just like, instead of what you're asking for, it's just like, why a movie? Right?
Sure.
Like, why isn't it just three episodes of a TV show?
Because this could easily be three episodes of the TV show like that. And that is the thing I think.
I know that's a big argument.
But
so I went in with that expectation.
Okay.
And it was met, and I was like, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, for maybe it's because of the era in which we grew up, in which we expect a Transformers the movie to make significant changes to the status quo. You know, a change to the character's dynamic, or a change to the status quo that feels like it merits the dramatic tension of the weight of a feature film. But do we really need that? That's what I'm having to interrogate myself. Like, A, is that not an unreasonable thing to ask, but especially with a franchise like The Mandalorian, whose particular strength is that it deliberately harkens back to the old movie serials that George Lucas was a fan of. Like, The Mandalorian is nothing if not an Errol Flynn, Robin Hood, Sergio Leone, you know, all of the influences that he drew. It is that thing and strives to be that thing. So I don't doubt that if you're Jon Favreau, when you make a decision to make a movie like this, it's not necessarily because of executive meddling or because of executive saying like, no, we need a Mandalorian movie to be this. It's because you want to maintain the spirit of that thing, which is that, no, it's the status quo doesn't change. It's a swashbuckling adventure. Yeah. It is for that reason, and that I'm thinking about it, that the times on the Mandalorian show when Mando and Grogu do rub elbows with some of the more recognizable faces in the galaxy far, far away, that though that bugged a lot of people, and though I will definitely admit Filoni started to get a lot more precious about working in his particular Filoni universisms, what was great about it is that it didn't change them. Din Djarin is never an important person in the galaxy, and that is a fundamental thing about him. He doesn't have some grand destiny that is going to change the fate of the galaxy. That's not what this show is about. He can rub elbows with the people that do, and if anything, the fact that he can interact with them and still not change, like, that doesn't elevate him to greatness. He's still just a man making his way in the world. That speaks to the strengths of what the show is about. And I'm glad that the movie maintained that it didn't do something great, that it didn't have galaxy-altering stakes. It's just, this is a real good swashbuckling adventure with a lot of practical puppets.
Well, a lot of what you're describing are like story plot stuff, but I'm still, creatively, if you're going to a different medium, like, it's an adaptation. Like, it's a more direct adaptation, going from TV to movie, but like, creatively, why is this a movie? Why am I sitting in a theater for? Usually, especially back in the day, it was, you know, there's more spectacle, or like, there's a reason that I'm, you know, I can sit people down for this 90-minute story versus a 30 to 45 to an hour to, I know, that they're all over the place sort of
thing.
They're all
over the place. What fundamentally is the difference anymore?
You're sitting in a theater with other people. It should feel premium. Like, it certainly feels better than watching in my living room.
You'd think, but I would ask the inverse question. Like, if you were to watch any given 3-episode arc of The Mandalorian in a theater, would it feel just as suitably cinematic as if it had been conceived for that medium? I argue that it would.
Then don't make a movie. Like, literally.
I mean, well, and that is the studio question, right? Is that like, if some studio exec has determined that the economics of, like, look.
No, again, we got to get economics out of that, because they'll always be like, yeah, it'll make money to do that. But I mean, like, artistically, but like, that's what we're talking about.
It's hard to separate those two, because again, if you're
I don't feel like there's an artistic reason to put it. To make a movie, it feels like maybe they were like, you know, the last Star Wars movie was like 7 years ago at this point. I wonder if they were just like, okay, we need to dip our toe into like putting Star Wars movies out again. Let's take these reliable characters and do something with it.
Because usually it's a bigger story or a different spin on.
But instead of, you know, because the nature of Mandalorian is that, you know, there aren't galaxy altering consequences to, you know, his adventure, that it comes out a little, because it seems like some people were expecting that out of the movie. Like, oh, shit, stuff's going to go down in this movie.
That is not what the trailer. The trailer was a big here, sit on a pillow. Don't think too hard. Have fun.
Yeah, no, and that's what it is. Yeah, it's like you get this big action scene. Like, there's so much action in the first hour of that movie, and like, you know, him like Batman taking down like 3 AT-ATs and blasting out of there without a scratch, and chase scenes and fight scenes and all kinds of action going on. Yeah.
Very legibly directed action scenes, I felt.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely do take your point. I just, it's hard to separate out that question, knowing that when you're Jon Favreau and you're not really presented with a choice, but you still have to make an artistic decision. You know, if the choice is you're told, hey, we're going to let you make more Mandalorian, but it has to be a feature film and not another season of the show. And then
and he's the Hutts can't speak Huttese.
And the Hutts can't speak Huttese. So then he's got to make an artistic choice. You know, that's when he's when presented with limited options.
Right.
What artistic choice does he make? Does he what does he honor about the material? What does he what does he swing for?
That's it. It's still a reframing of the same question, because those are the economics in it. Obviously, like, the movies are, any movie is being made because it, you know, there was interest in it. But like, as we're discussing, is this good? Is this bad? Were intentions communicated well? Was this, you know, did I like it? Did I not like it? It's more, you know, I think that's closer to the why wasn't this on a small screen? Like, did it, you know, did I enjoy it more because it was in a theater?
I think the action is the action is noticeably bigger in this movie and more frequent, like, than it would be, you know, most episodes of The Mandalorian. Like, you know, you get, they're not like all out action. Like, you might get some action like here at the end, like some big, larger battles. But this is like, there's a huge battle like right off the bat. And then, you know, fighting in the gladiator arena, and then
latitude,
latitude, the big escape scene, like fighting the creature. Like, you know, there are big things, big action set pieces in here that are much bigger than what you would see, that I feel like has been seen in the TV show.
Yeah, like that THX pulling back of just sort of like, ah, yes, this is, I'm watching
so
this.
So if there was a thing that it was like, okay, we're going to go in the, what were we going to do differently in making the Mandalorian Grogu movie versus the show? It was like, we are going to make the action scenes bigger and more frequent.
Cool. Yeah. Simple enough. Like, and I feel like that's what it was at least like selling itself on.
And Weiss, I don't want you to think that I'm necessarily coming down on one side or the other. I think it is a very broad question that it's such a broad question to reckon with as that line between cinema and television gets ever more blurry is all.
Yeah. And exact same, like even realizing in the middle of it, of just going like, oh, this is the question that people have been trying to sort of grapple with for the last like 5-10 years too.
Like, what makes a, for, you know, what makes a Marvel movie stand out over like one of the TV series? Could Black Widow have just been like a mini series or whatever? Could you have, you know,
and especially because of COVID, a lot of those you know, it was a streaming movie for most of us, you know.
They did have to do some figuring out of that themselves. But yeah, no, I like the bit, you know, the it's very easy. There's a part in the movie where Mando is kind of taken out and it's all focused on Grogu for like a good 15, 20 minutes. It's easy to see like, oh, this could have been an episode of the show where, like, you know, this is a very Grogu focus. Like, what does he do? Like, how does he handle himself by himself? Sort of deal.
But even Tim, even by that way of compare, forgive me for finish your thought. I'm sorry, finish your thought.
Yeah, no, I was just talking about stuff that I liked about the movie. You know, I like Rada the Hutt, even if I'm like, you know, wish he'd not. It's like with all the Hutts, when they show up, like they say like their first two lines in Huttese, and then it's just them speaking English.
Yeah,
and it just doesn't feel right at all. And like, even sitting there in the theater, I'm like, I feel like some studio executive said, you need to, you can't have them just speaking in a bleep bloop blop language the entire movie.
I bought it. Well, the twins mostly do. The twins lapsed into English here and there, whereas when you've got Jeremy Allen White, it's because you want to hear his acting delivery,
I guess.
And then, you know,
do we see his abs?
Oh, yeah, you do.
Yes, you do.
Okay.
Yeah,
that, just the Hutts going.
That Hutt is, dude, no, Rod of the Hutt is ripped. He is jacked.
Jeremy Allen White plays a jacked Hutt. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Well, it's like, you know, I was thinking about this.
Voice actors like, don't have to look like whatever.
No, because it's like, you know, most Hutts are just sitting there in their palaces, like, you know, just eating all the time. But he was forced into gladiatorial combat. So it's kind of like, well, what does a Hutt look like when it's like forced into this kind of life and has
that
to
is
survive?
A fun. Yeah. I like that sort of exploration. Don't get me wrong. I felt like that was
a good enough oblique in as much as the Mandalorian series started to indulge in rubbing elbows with more famous characters. This one felt oblique enough that it felt like it served a point in the story. Like, he is the son of Jabba the Hutt. And so we're experiencing a bit more legacy comparisons. Like, he's got something to say about the relationship between being a good father to his son. And
It's more detached. It's not just like, here's Jabba's brother, Baba, who is exactly like Jabba.
Right.
Wait, go on.
Baba the Hutt.
Baba the Hutt.
But so, Tim, I wanted to circle back briefly to what you said about the Marvel movies versus the shows. I think that's why this particular case feels even more blurry to me than your typical what makes a movie versus what makes a TV show. Because, the Marvel TV shows are, I think, inarguably more talky. They lean way more into the by virtue of having a long form serialized show, they lean into the strengths of that by having them. They're far more dialogue heavy. They're far more relationship based. It explores the best of them, I feel, explore the genre and sci-fi ramifications of those relationships in really effective ways, like in WandaVision, that you don't necessarily get the scope for in an action movie.
Whereas
The Mandalorian, even the show necessarily by virtue of its theme, is not very talky. It's not, a lot of The Mandalorian 3-episode arcs could just be movies. They could be that first season of Mandalorian could be like the Man with No Name trilogy. Basically, you could break it up into 3 3-episode arcs, and it would be 3 Sergio Leone westerns. Because of the show's theme, the line is extra blurry.
Yeah, I just think that gives. I guess maybe it's not a fair question. I just think that made that job of making a movie out of a show that is referencing all the movie sides of this movie franchise very difficult to separate itself. Like, it's just, I do not envy that writing team whatsoever.
That's the thing. I can't think of what could have been done differently. Again, if I'm Jon Favreau and I'm serving all the masters that I have to serve, but also he shepherded this series into creation. It's not like he's a hired gun. He has a vested interest in doing good by it. So how do you creatively, what do you do when tasked with, I'm going to turn my already very cinematic TV show into a movie. How do I make it feel earned? It's a tough job.
Yeah. Like all I could think of is if there was a promise of, Grogu has been, hasn't done anything on their own. Now Grogu is on their own, sort of thing. Some kind of challenge that Grogu has not had or whatever. It's Lone Wolf and Cub. So, you've got 6 movies to pull directly from right there, too, which get pulpier and pulpier as they go. So, tricky.
Yep.
No, I was going to say, very much on the nose with that question, but one of the reasons I liked WandaVision is that show is exactly like, why is this a TV show?
Yeah.
Because it couldn't not be a TV show.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not the only mark of quality, but when that ship works, that's the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, all right. I think I've explored this about as far as I can.
Oh, yeah. Was there one more move? Somebody had 3.
I had 3, yeah.
I have another one, yes.
Yeah, Tim's got another one.
Ooh.
Dave, did you see the Sheep Detectives?
I did! did see the Sheep Detectives.
Oh, is it fun? Is it fun?
Yeah, it's super fun. Yes.
Yeah, it's great. Good.
All right.
We loved it.
We all loved it. Yes.
Okay, maybe I'll see that. Maybe I'll convince instead of group. I can do both.
Yeah, we when we saw the trailer, we were all together for seeing some other movie, and we saw the trailer for it. What movie? Oh, we saw it for Project Hail Mary. We saw the trailer this, and we were like, "What the hell is this movie?" And Jan was
just
so
read on that trailer. Oh, okay.
Jan was like, "We got to see this movie." And I was like, "Really? You're into this? Okay." But then I learned more about it. I'm like, "Oh, people really love this movie. Oh, it's the Paddington guy."
Wait,
oh,
what?
No, is
no,
it?
No. No, it's not. It's not Paul King. No. I would have seen it
by
now.
It's the Minions guy.
Yeah.
No, it is? Oh, jeez.
Yeah, this is the guy that directed the Minions.
Oh, I got my facts way wrong then.
You're so far off.
It's also co-written by Craig Mazin, that now is known for The Last of Us and Chernobyl, but also had a history.
It is based on a book. Yeah, it's adapted.
Yeah, but he started in like comedies. He did like Eurotrip and all that shit too.
Sure. But yeah. But Jana likes books, so.
Oh, jeez.
That's so
this is who
funny
Craig
going
Mazin
from
is.
Paddington to Minions.
Oh, God. No, I think I saw Craig Mazin and I thought that, oh, no, but he's Jesus. It's just Chernobyl guy.
I was going to say, no, Craig Mazin's like, I listened to his writer podcast for a long time. So, like, he knows, he does know his, like, Chernobyl's great. I did not see The Last
of Us. I loved Chernobyl. Yeah, no, it's, it's definitely a very, it's not this movie.
Oh, I mean, that's super funny.
Oh, God.
Anyways, you will love it as much as you love the Minions.
People say they're surprising. I'm never going to see a Minions movie.
No, those trailers for that movie are intolerable.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, no, Sheep Detectives is an absolute hoot of a, you know, a sheep-led whodunit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, it's silly, but it has, like, you know, strong themes and messages of loss and coming to terms with loss and stuff with a fun star-cast. Twisty turn. Yeah, an absolutely fucking star cast,
stacked cast. Yeah. And that's what surprised me, is that those themes of loss did not feel at all condescending toward a young audience. You know, they were like surprisingly sophisticated. And dare I say poetic, you know, not in any way, it's just not condescending at all, which is, you know, great.
Cool. No, that has raised that in my, we'll end up seeing that.
Yeah, no, it's just that's a cool, really fun story with, you know, it's appropriately goofy.
Very British.
To what you would expect.
Yes.
Yeah, very, very British. And it was great.
Oh, and so Nicholas Braun is in this film doing a British accent, and I did not think that he was British, but I guess I don't know. No, he's American. He's from New York. He's doing an excellent accent.
Oh, nice.
Like, to the point where I thought that he was actually British and had just been doing American accents in the work I had seen him in previously. So
Nicholas Braun.
Good for Nicholas Braun.
I know Nicholas Braun. Yeah, because I haven't seen Succession. That's why.
Well, he was, if you caught this that Saturday Night Live movie, he played both Andy Kaufman and Jim Henson.
I see. Interesting. I had heard somebody did, but I have not. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had that on my resume, perhaps I would retire.
Yeah,
just be done.
Sheep Detectives was legit, just a delight.
Okay, I love hearing that. What a surprise! I love going into the. I mean, like, I very much liked I Love Boosters, but I feel like that is the star of the movie segment of this punch. Sheep Detectives.
And my third one was Raimi's Send Help.
Oh, what did you think? What did you think?
Liked it a lot. It is exactly what you would want from Raimi being Raimi, you know, just a fun goofball. It almost seems trite to say morally gray because obviously you know who you want to root for, but
yes,
you know, but doesn't feel, you still don't feel quite right with the way that things.
Oh yeah, they don't make it easy. Yeah. But also, boy, Rachel McAdams looking down the barrel of the gun not once but twice. Like right at that end, just I thought she did such a good job of that.
Oh, she was stout. She's so, yeah, just pitch perfect. Absolutely understood the assignment. Just what a fun movie with just the perfect amount of tension too. Mm-hmm. Just the striking a really great balance between, you know, between goofiness and tension. Mm-hmm. Just really enjoyed it.
Yay. Great, no, I'm great glad. I was thinking about that. I realized that it did make it to streaming and of recent. Yeah. But yeah, as I said, imagine all of those all of those moments, not even of blood splatter, but of like water hitting faces in 40X and like just the perfect amount of time before. So like it splashes, it waits like a second and a half, so you kind of forget about it, and then you get jolted in the face. So good.
Oh god, yeah, no, I can only imagine.
And that plane crash and all of that,
just oh god, yeah, all over.
Like, and that plane crash was such a good like promise of like, oh, Raimi is doing Raimi, don't worry.
Yes. Yeah, that from right from the get-go. And that's why Jan kept asking, I kept telling her about it because I watched it over the course of 4 days while working on my elliptical machine. And so I kept telling her about it as if they were episodes of a TV show. And she's like, this sounds really good. Do you think I would like it? And I kept saying like, maybe, I don't know. It's that tone of like, oh, this is suddenly surprisingly gory. I don't know if that would put her off or if she'd be able to push through that to get to this particular tone, which is
how does she do with slapstick or like physical comedy, you know?
I think it depends on context. That's why, you know, I wonder if either that would, one of the things would affect the other, either the surprise goriness would hinder her from enjoying the slapstick or the slapstick would take the sting out of the goriness. It's hard to say.
Yep. I feel that.
Yeah. I don't know, but I loved it.
Yay. I think that and I Love Boosters are probably still the best I've seen so far. There's a new Jackass coming next month. Can sit and watch and cry with my boys. It'd be great.
Yeah.
And yeah.
All right.
I think that might be it for this
episode.
I guess I would only add briefly that my oldest is playing Breath of the Wild for the first time, and I've been watching her play, and it's been a joy to re-experience that game through someone else's eyes. She's been picking up the Breath of the Wild companion book, whatever it was called, Designing a Champion or whatever that volume, which is a wonderful book. Even to the point where I finally bought myself a copy of Hyrule Historia after years of just borrowing it periodically from our local library because she wanted to drill down into the timeline and see, you know, explore all the various influences that have, you know, bubbled up in Breath of the Wild's Hyrule. To the point where I had to go to a dermatologist on Friday, and I was trying real hard to pay attention to what she was prescribing me until I noticed a Korok sticker on her laptop. And at that point, I stopped listening, and I had to sort of be like, is that a Korok sticker on your laptop? And she was like, yes, I love Zelda. I'm playing Tears of the Kingdom right now. I've been dragging it out for 3 years and I've been hesitant to finish it, but I put like 200 hours into it and I'm finally going to make myself beat it. And so then we started talking about that and that just derailed the entire appointment. So now I have a lot of questions.
This is why Dave is going to have skin cancer.
Yeah.
Skin issues. But yeah, it's been, and again, sort of seeing the contrast while watching her play Breath of the Wild and seeing the contrast to just the older, more linear style of Zelda makes me think, as much as I thought maybe I wanted to go back to a more linear style of Zelda, maybe I actually don't. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I could again. So that's all.
No.
Yeah, right. I'm gonna
say, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
This episode. Like, yeah,
always much to tack on to, but yeah, I feel like that feels like natural ending.
That's a natural end. Yeah, yeah.
It's a natural ending.
It's caring. Yeah, wow. Next time, hopefully lots of new games to talk about. Let's hope. Mm-hmm. Exciting developments in the industry. No new hardware.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll at least have news to talk about, even if I don't get to.
No, although there is new hardware. I mean, they just announced all these new handheld PCs that use Intel Arc processors, which, you know, I thought was going to make them a little cheaper. But the first one I saw starts at $1,500. So, yeah. Fuck that.
Yeah. Yeah, that I'd.
That is no, but I would be very excited to see if any new hardware is announced. Like, is there some budget PC maker or someone capitalizing on the strength of mobile processors to make a new Linux compatible, you know, Steam Deck style that runs PC games through a translation layer, as the Steam Deck does, and as Android phones can do. Something's got to give. Some way to make hardware more affordable has got to happen. And if anyone surprises us with that this summer, I'd be all over it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how you win Games Fest. You walk up and you say $2.99 into the mic.
Yeah. Jeez. It's 1995 all over again.
Yeah, yep. I will say, maybe last, I kind of related to that, is I was in here playing Dark Souls 3, because I still have my PS5 hooked up to my computer monitor from playing Resident Evil. It turns out the PlayStation's not in a lot of demand on the TV. But, you know, Richard walked in. He's like, oh, are you playing Elden Ring? I'm like, no, this is Dark Souls 3. This came out like 10 years ago. He's like, oh, this looks really good for a game that came out 10 years ago. And I was like, yes. Like,
yeah.
About Witcher 3 is about as good as games ever needed to look.
Yeah.
And, oh, which got DLC, a new expansion announced, which, like, holy shit, I need to, like, get going with that game to be ready for that. Wild stuff there. But, yeah, it's just, we don't need to keep piling on hardware. Like, we are good with really, like, a high-end PS4, which I guess is what a PS5 is, maybe, but, like, that's it. We don't have to keep going past this. This thing's fine. We're good.
Yeah.
If it can play PlayStation 4 games, you're probably fine. Once you get to PS5, then it's going to make them look nicer for sure and run better, which is good. But like you're playable at like a PS4 level of hardware. That's what a Switch 2 does. That's basically what a Steam Deck does. We can just stop.
It's fine
here.
Yeah.
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 Start going back. That would be wild if like Sony just released like a new PlayStation 4. Because they could for like $300 or something like that. That's like, oh yeah, I can just play most of the stuff on you know, PS5, you know, except for a couple things, but thousands of games for it. Putting the PS4 back out.
But no,
that would be
there's strategies to do.
I feel like I've pitched this idea. I have longed for this idea, just like a handheld PS4 in a Steam Deck form factor.
Well, you said
like
handheld.
Yeah. When they announced the PlayStation Portal, that's what I remember wishing it was, like just spec it to PS4. But they would rather sell us the games again to stream. So,
yeah.
Rather than letting us play an existing library. All right, let's end it. Let's end it.
Let's go do it. Good night, everybody.
Oh, he's so tired. Okay, goodbye, everybody. And cut.